Hey everyone, Pat Mayo here, and I got some bad news. When Jake and I were recording, we switched over new systems here, and frankly, it fucked up the audio, and I've done the best I can to clean it up, but I'm just letting you know now that it's not great. I think you can listen to it. I think I've made it all right, but if you're going to complain about the audio, just don't bother watching it. I don't blame you. If you want to stick around, there's good content in there. If you can make it out, just bear with me and all the that happens like whenever there's a pause. But sorry about that. We'll have this cleaned up soon, I promise. Enjoy the show.
Pat Mayo Hour.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Hour, week 4 rankings debate. We're going to go position by position and flesh out these rankings. I've already released my tight ends, my quarterbacks, and my defense, but those are up to change. Fortunately, on the internet, it's not print. I can change these things. And the running backs and wide receivers, I have my temp list. I've sent them to Jake Seeley from rotoexperts.com. He has reviewed them. We're going to talk about the guys that maybe he doesn't like so much and where they're ranked. So let's get right into it. Jake, I'm going to go through my top 15. Let's say that to start off with. So David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, Melvin Gordon, DeMarco Murray, Le'Veon Bell in his return week coming in at number 5, C.J. Anderson, LeSean McCoy. I put Mark Ingram where I think you might put him, but I'm going to have to change that one, obviously, because maybe you'll have him lower, maybe you'll have him higher. LeGarrette Blount, Lamar Miller, Todd Gurley, Jordan Howard against the Lions, Matt Forte, Christine Michael, and Carlos Hyde come in at number 15. So just out of those top 15 guys, who's too high, who's too low, and where would you put Ingram and Bell?
You know, for how much you hate Mark Ingram, you're really good at ranking him. That's all I have to say, because I'm not changing him again this week. That's actually exactly where I put him.
Really?
Yeah. I would put him right behind McCoy, right ahead of LeGarrette Blount. I like the position. I don't have any problems with it. I think you're doing a good job for somebody you supposedly hate so much.
I'm not ranking him. It's your ranking. I just have to put him there as a placeholder so when I build the graphics that I don't accidentally skip and have to change everyone as it goes along. So I tried to do my best guess. I know you like Mark Ingram, and this is a pretty soft matchup against the Chargers defense. I figured you'd have him inside the top 10. I wasn't wrong about that.
No, I had him right at number 8. The one I think is a little bit too high is I know DeMarco Murray's been a beast so far, and I'm a huge fan of him. I love having him in about 80% of my leagues, but I'm looking at the matchup, and if you look at what they've given up so far, 6-58 with Langford, they didn't much in Kansas City, and then James White, and all those numbers, and why I'm looking at that is that's in the passing game, and that's where I think DeMarco Murray has a lot of his values, that they haven't given up a lot, only 58 yards receiving the running backs through 3 games. That's my concern for DeMarco Murray.
I just feel like this offense, he is the only decent cog in it, and they're just going to continue to feed him. He's playing almost 2/3 of the snaps over Derrick Henry right now, and I don't think he's had fewer than 7 targets in any game. And even if they're trying to take that away from them, it seems like the Titans have no other options but to do it.
I understand that, but only 6 catches for 58 yards. And again, it's not like they face junk running backs that aren't involved in the passing game with Kansas City mixed in there and Langford too. So I'm with you. I love him. I would definitely use Le'Veon Bell, C.J. Anderson, and probably he's probably right there at LeSean McCoy, but I like Bell and Anderson more.
Okay, so we'll get to Le'Veon Bell in a second. The one thing with C.J. Anderson is the Bucs are actually pretty good at stopping the run. I know they gave up 2 touchdowns to Todd Gurley last week, but it took him almost 30 carries, and he couldn't even hit 90 yards. He did get the 2 touchdowns, averaged 3.1 yards per carry. I know Denver's going to try to run the ball, but as we saw last week against the Bengals, Trevor Siemian, old Trevy, he's airing the ball out a little bit. I could see that happening against the Bucs only because it's there for the taking. Anderson's going to get his 20 to 25 touches, and he'll do whatever he does with them, and he's going to get the goal line touches and have the ability to score. That's why I still like him, but I don't think that he's an elite, elite option this week, where the elite upside for DeMarco Murray, because of his work in the passing game, is still going to be there.
And I get what you're saying. I don't feel as confident. I think Houston presents a tough matchup for him, so I would just have a little bit lower, but it's basically nitpicking from your 4th best running back to your 7th best running back. I mean, who cares at the end anyway, because you're going to be starting him.
All right, let's talk about Le'Veon Bell. He comes back. He's getting a paycheck again. He can afford all the weed he wants, and it looks like Mike Tomlin is going to give him the ball. We saw this last season. We were a bit pensive with Le'Veon Bell once he returned because we're like, man, D'Angelo looks really good. This is probably going to be a split. And I think he played like 95% of the snaps because that's what Pittsburgh does in its offense. Whoever the lead dog is going to be on the field as much as possible. So I have no concerns about Le'Veon Bell. I ain't scared. Do you think that people should be scared about it?
I got to tell you, I know you make a great point because we said the same thing before when this happened. But at the same time, there's like, hey, the guy's had multiple injuries. Do we really need to drive him into the ground and risk him getting hurt again? I know he's got the extended time because of the suspension, but I'm just looking at how good D'Angelo Williams is. And I'm just like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, hey, let's just be reasonable here. Let's give him 15 to 20 touches instead of 25 and right out the gate. So I'm with you, though, just for the fact that even on those touches, even if he, let's just say he only gets 15 carries and 5 receptions, Le'Veon Bell's going to do so much with those anyway that he still deserves a top 5 ranking.
Yeah, well, in the course of the rankings, I've kind of taken the side that I think it's going to be all Le'Veon Bell. I have D'Angelo Williams down at 48. Like, I have D'Angelo Williams on almost every team that I have, and he's been, you know, pretty good for 2 of the first 3 weeks. I just don't see him doing much in this game. Like, he's not someone I'm going to start. Like, I even look at it like I'd start Charkandrick West on the other side of the ball just because I know he has a base for receptions. Even if it's only like a 6-point upside, I don't even think D'Angelo gets to that this week. I could be way off base here. I just don't want to be starting him. I would hold him on every team. And if there's ever a time to buy low on D'Angelo Williams because people want to get rid of him, even if you don't have Le'Veon Bell, he's not a bad guy to stash on your bench should anything happen to Le'Veon Bell, because as we saw, he's a top 5 running back when Le'Veon Bell is out of the picture. But is there any circumstance where you would play D'Angelo Williams this week?
In the standard league, I'm desperate, but that's about it. I'm talking like my other options, Fozzie Whitaker or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would still start, even in a standard league, I still think I would start Fozzie Whitaker at this point. Maybe he can turn one of his, like, 4 catches into a long run or do something on special teams somehow, recover a fumble or something stupid like that. Just, I don't think you're going to see D'Angelo on the field too much. LeGarrette Blount comes in at number 9. I have not been a big supporter of LeGarrette Blount only because I always see this as a game flow thing. When the Patriots are favored by a lot of points, I think starting Blount is a really good move. I've just been off on my assessment of the Patriots 2 of the first 3 weeks, and it's blown up in my face with a low ranking. With them favored, it doesn't matter who's going to play quarterback for them because we don't know that at this point. They're going to be favored over the Bills at home, even if Julian Edelman is under center. So I just expect to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount, and I don't think the Bills have an answer for him.
And neither do I. So basically, although if we're going by history, we should jump off board with LeGarrette Blount now that you actually have him inside the top 10.
Yes, you are absolutely right. And I don't have the most supreme confidence in LeGarrette Blount, but as we talked about it, when I went through the 15s, like, there's not a whole lot of guys I have. Even the guys that I do feel comfortable getting a lot of touches with this week, they're presented with some tougher matchups. So all things being equal, if I can project out LeGarrette Blount, which is still a bit dicey, to get around 20 touches, probably all 20 carries, and he's going up against the Bills, I like that better than someone like Matt Forte going up against the Seahawks.
Yeah, I definitely do, too. And as you said, there's likely no Sammy Watkins. We saw what the Bills can do on offense. I mean, really, that wasn't even really offense-driven last week. I was going to say on offense 2 weeks ago when they didn't have Sammy Watkins, what it affects them and they don't do. I don't think we can expect the Marquise Goodwin-Greg Salas show to happen again. So I'm with you. I expect them to be up. The Patriots should be walking away with this game. And that means LeGarrette Blount's probably going to be getting carries way into the fourth quarter and probably have a good chance for 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, it's that touchdown upside that comes along with it, because it might change a little bit with Gronk expected to return to full health and play a full complement of snaps, but it seems like they're very content with once they get inside the 5-yard line, maybe they take a shot to Gronk, but other than that, it's going to be all LeGarrette Blount. Let's drop down to the 11 to 20 range. Like I mentioned, Todd Gurley comes in at number 11 against Arizona. Jordan Howard at 12. Forte, Kristen Michael. He's Kristen now that he had a decent game. Carlos Hyde, 15. Jamal Charles, 16. Jeremy Hill, 17. Charles Sims, 18. Frank Gore, 19. And Isaiah Crowell, number 20. Still averaging a ton of points per opportunity, and the Redskins do not have a good run defense. So you can dial up some Isaiah Crowell this week because you know they're going to want to keep the ball on the ground. But there are some contentious names in here. Let's start with Jamal Charles. It looks like he's going to be back. Obviously, if he is inactive, don't play Jamal Charles. But at number 16, the fact that they've kept him out this long to get him healthy, I think they're going to use him like he's Jamal Charles. And now, again, I could be completely off base with that. Maybe it's a split with Spencer Ware. Maybe West is in more than we think. But I just have this feeling that you don't keep a guy out this long, wait for him to be healthy, and then not use him.
Here's my problem, is I'm not sure he even plays this week. I'm actually with you. I feel like you and I are the only two people left saying, hey, if Jamal Charles is playing, you start him. That being said, I'm not this aggressive. I know you love Jamal Charles, but Spencer Ware I don't think is going to go away right out the gate. I could see this more of a 50-50 split for at least the first week if he does play. I'm more on board with him after his first game back. But I don't know if you, I do think they're not going to use him unless he's, you don't keep saying, hey, we're only using him with the scout team. Hey, he's only getting first team practice reps now. You're not going to put him in a game if he's not ready if you waited this long. But at the same time, I just don't see them feeling the need to give him 20 touches right out of the gate.
All right, well, let's play a few different scenarios here. If Jamaal Charles doesn't play, where does Spencer Ware go? Does he go inside the top 10? Like, would you play Gurley or Ware against Pittsburgh?
I would still play Gurley. Arizona's actually not been that good against the defense. Their defense just hasn't been that good this year.
Yeah, but again, it's still the Rams. They can become highly predictable, and if you have... if you can shut down Kenny Britt or Tavon Austin, I mean, you... you can figure out what's going on with Todd Gurley. All right, so you would go... I would go Ware over Gurley. Like, I would put Ware in between Lamar Miller and Todd Gurley at number 11 if there's no Jamaal Charles. But let's say both of them play. And you would be... Maybe I need to move Jamaal Charles down my ranking. So let's get your opinion on this. So I have Jamaal Charles at 16 right now. If they're both active going into the game, unless we hear some sort of Andy Reid come out and say, oh, it's going to be 100% Jamaal Charles, which is not going to happen. So we're going to have to play this one a little bit by ear. Would you go Jamaal Charles or Jeremy Hill?
Jeremy Hill. I actually would move Jeremy Hill up more to begin with. And I know you have PPR rankings. This isn't standard, but at the same time, I'm looking at this. I'm looking at the matchup for the Dolphins, the second most rushing yards allowed, only 71 receiving. So this is a game plan that's going to be a lot more Jeremy Hill than Giovanni Bernard.
All right, well, we'll come back to, we'll circle back around to Hill in a second because you got problems with that. Charles or Sims against Denver?
Sims?
Charles? Naturally. Charles or Gore?
That's where I would cut. That's where I would draw the line.
So you would play Charles over Gore. Would you play Charles over Crowell?
Yes.
Would you play Charles over Jerick?
Definitely. The Giants defense has been good.
In a PPR league, would you play him over Theo Riddick?
Yeah, I'd still play him over Riddick.
All right, so he should go in between Charles Sims and Frank Gore.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Although Denver is better running up the gut against them, I still think Sims sees too much of the workload.
Yeah, I just think, and Sims is going to get enough involved in the passing game, I think, where he, in a PPR, he can squeak out like six catches for 18 yards and, you know, have a quick 8 points that way, and that could be more than Charles scores if things go south for him.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there.
All right, so Spencer Ware, I had ranked at number 39. Where should I move him up to if we're going to move Jamaal Charles back down? Would you go Chris Thompson or Spencer Ware?
Spencer Ware.
Spencer Ware or James White?
Spencer Ware.
Spencer Ware or Asiata?
Spencer Ware.
Ware or Yeldon?
Spencer Ware. Yeldon stinks.
Yeah, but what, Yeldon's still going to be used in a game where the Jags are going to be passing a lot.
Yeah.
He's going to be in the game.
I forgot 9 catches for 8 yards still matters.
Yeah, that's 10 points.
I would still use him over Yeldon, though.
Okay, so would you go Ware or Duke Johnson?
Duke Johnson.
All right, so that's sort of the cutoff. I actually would prefer to play Yeldon in this matchup, but I'm going to put Ware in between Yeldon and Asiata, so that makes him running back number 36 for the week in PPR scoring. And again, you can always check the updated rankings on rotoexperts.com or sportsgrid.com. Should anything happen, Charles is declared out, although we kind of went over where Ware is. You can see where Ware and West are going to go. Jordan Howard, I have ranked at number 12 right now. So... I mean, against Detroit, if he's going to be basically the only guy active, with Langford being out, Kadeem Carey, we're still not sure what's going on with him. Is Jordan Howard someone that, you know, we can just kind of thrust in and trust in our lineups?
Is that another one of your weak things? You're going to thrust him in? Is that what you're going for there?
Yeah, I'm
going
to gyrate him into my lineup.
Yeah, that's what I like there. Jordan, look, the appeal here is the one everybody got excited for Virginia. Actually, I should say everybody. The people who actually thought Jeremy Langford was going to be a good fantasy option, the upside was, well, he's on the field for 95% of the snaps. So even if he's not that good, by attrition alone, he's going to have some value. Well, now Jordan Howard's the better running back. And now, as you mentioned, if Kadeem Carey is out, I got to like this a lot. The matchup's not the best, but at the same time, again, 95% of the snaps is 95% of the snaps, and he's a better running back.
And what we saw at the end of the Bears and Dallas game, if Detroit can jump out to a lead here, they're not scared to use Howard in the passing game, although he's got a bit of butterfingers, I'm not going to lie to you about that, but he might end up with 8 targets in this game, convert 6 of them into catches, and see what happens from there. That gives him a really good floor.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Jordan Howard.
All right, so Kristen Michael is number 14, obviously. Bill, I'm glad you talked me into moving him up in the rankings last week, because I had him much farther down as I initially did the right. So this is why we chat this out. Do you like him against the Jets this week, A, and B, When Rawls eventually returns 4 to 6 weeks from now, do you think that Rawls can take this job back?
I actually like him a little bit more than Matt Forte this week. I would just flip-flop them, but that's nitpicking. I think they're both terrific options. I am a big Kristen Michael fan. You know, obviously, everybody was on board last week and dancing around the rooms that we finally had Kristen Michael show up. B, though, I do think Thomas Rawls gets back in the mix. No, I don't think he takes the lead role, but this is the issue I have with Thomas Rawls in this backfield to begin with, is they have plenty of options if everybody is healthy. I don't see him going completely away. I just see this being a 55-45 split towards Michael. Heck, maybe Rawls comes back 100% and starts flashing like he did last year, but Kristen Michael I don't think is going to go away from being 40-45% involved. So maybe his job is back, but it's going to be almost a timeshare, I think.
The Jets' defense is actually pretty good, even the run defense. And if CJ Procites, your boy, if he ends up active, I could see him playing a bigger role this week, especially through the passing game, which I think could limit some of Michael's upside if he doesn't score a touchdown.
And I think that's a fair point. I think that it comes down to it. Right now, CJ Procites sounds questionable, so I think that if he is active, I agree with you. I would keep Matt Forte ahead of him, but I was in my mind thinking of no CJ Procites again.
Yeah, I'm going to keep Forte where he is right now just because I think he's going to get more involved in the passing game than Michael. But are you buying or selling Michael? Because it feels like his value is never going to be higher than it is at this moment.
Oh, I'm selling in a heartbeat. Are you kidding me? We've been waiting for decades for this guy, and now he finally produces, and there's still the question. I know Thomas Rawls, this is mysterious fibula injury. I don't know if it's broken, it's strained, it's bruised. Who the hell knows at this point? So maybe he's back in 4 weeks, but at the same time, it's once he's back, he's going to demand some carries or some touches per game. So I'm with you right now coming off that game. For us waiting our entire lives for Kristen Michael, his value is not going to be any higher than it is right now.
What do you think you can get in return for Kristen Michael in just straight-up running backs? Because you kind of mentioned it, everyone's been waiting for Michael to be good. And now, in everyone's mind, like, it's really kind of bizarre the way that people talk about him, like he's kind of like a top-five running back. And yeah. I don't think he's that guy. But if you were on the trade market right now, you have Kristen Michael, what are you looking back for in return? Like, would you try to capitalize on someone who thinks they're selling high on Marvin Jones? Because I would much prefer to have Marvin Jones.
I definitely would. If you're looking at pure running back for running back, I know that last night's game hurts a little bit, but for the value that he actually scored, but in the passing game. But I would go after Mark Ingram. Maybe Eddie Lacy. Eddie Lacy's getting the yards. The touchdowns just haven't been there, and that offense is finally starting to click. The biggest appeal of Eddie Lacy is the fact that he gets double-digit touchdowns. So if he can start getting the touchdowns to go with the yards, which was the concern of him not getting that in the past, I think that he's a good buy low and a perfect. That would be one of those perfect switch your running backs out. You get the low end, you sell on the high end.
Yeah, and there's probably no – the best time to trade for running backs or any player in general is when they're going into a bye week. Right. Because they're just out of sight, out of mind. People are like, oh, I can't even play this guy this week. He's useless to me. Yeah, give me Kristen Michael. So, yeah, I'm sort of on board with you for that. I mean, I would still – maybe this works better after this week, and it's hard to say whether Michael has a good game or not. But, like, I have DeMarco Murray in, like, half my leagues anyway, and I'm trying to figure out how to get him in the rest of my leagues. Do you think there's a package you could put together where you have Michael as a primary and DeMarco coming back as a primary?
I think so, because I think there's enough people out there that still doubt DeMarco Murray, and they doubt it for two reasons. Is Derrick Henry's behind him, and he's still getting plenty of touches, and oh, man, this guy's so big and impressive, and look at him run down the field at his size, and all. And then the other side of it is everybody in their mind is thinking, oh, DeMarco Murray's always getting hurt, which is actually kind of a myth towards the last part of his career. He's been pretty healthy. So I think that's the double fold here, is that people don't want to trust him for 16 games, and they are worried about Derrick Henry. So I'm not sure that there's not some fanatic for Kristen Michael out there that might just take Kristen Michael and a flyer for DeMarco Murray.
How about this? Alshon for Kristen Michael.
Oh, no, I want Alshon all day long.
So do I. But okay. I'm getting a lot of questions. Like, people are really perturbed with the production that Alshon Jeffrey's been putting up so far this year, because the target level is not to the heights that we thought might happen. I actually think Hoyer might be better off for him in this intermittent period, but, like, he hasn't put up a bad game yet, and he hasn't scored a touchdown. Like, that's good, right?
I completely agree. If you look at it, there's a couple receivers like that. Like, yeah, people asking me, oh, when's Odell Beckham going to start really producing? I'm sorry, 100 yards isn't good enough for you? Like, why does somebody have to put up 120 and a touchdown every single week? I'm with you. I've been buying Alshon Jeffrey everywhere I don't already own him. I think that's the biggest problem is we spent the entire offseason as a fantasy community saying he was going to be DeAndre Hopkins this year, seeing 180 targets, and that's not happening. So the immediate thought in people's mind is, well, no, he's not any good. He's depressed. I don't know what's going on.
Before we end up getting to that, you wanted to move Jeremy Hill up, so make your case for Jeremy Hill.
It's actually just kind of what I said earlier. It's the fact that if you look at this defense, they don't give up any receiving yards. They gave up tons of rushing yards. This is a Cincinnati. Now, granted, the Cincinnati Bengals are very hard to predict any given week with their running backs, as we saw last week. And we found out that part of it is because Denver, you do attack up the middle. But at the same time, this is a game plan that should lean towards Jeremy Hill. This is actually the game I was targeting to try and buy low on Jeremy Hill before last week happened. And say this is going to be a week where he could put up 100 yards in the score or 80 and two touchdowns. I really think it's going to be a big week for him. I'd move him up ahead of Matt Forte for the matchup.
So you'd move Jeremy Hill from 17 up into spot number 13 in the rankings?
I would, personally.
And that's still in PPR leagues?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big week for Jeremy Hill. I could be wrong because the Bengals do it all the time. They screw with us all the time. But I'm looking at the matchup and everything on paper says it should be a Jeremy Hill game, not a Giovanni Bernard game.
I mean, everything last week pointed to a Gio Bernard game, not a Jeremy Hill game, and Jeremy Hill showed up.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, basically just flip it then. Like, I don't like you before with Kristen Michael, just bail. Now that you finally made the move, or Garrett Blunt, I should say, now that we're actually switching, just bail. Get off board.
All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to trust you, Jake. I mean, there's a reason you come inside, like, the top five or top three in terms of accuracy rankings every single year, because you're good at stuff like this. Maybe I was a bit down on Jeremy Hill. You have sold me in that Thursday night game that Jeremy Hill is going to be better than Matt Forte is against Seattle. Boom. Hill going up in the ranks, all right?
All right. Well, at least I'll be one. Either way, I got Kristen Michael in my back pocket from last week, so at worst, I'm going to be 1-1.
Yeah, I mean, what a batting percentage, 50%. You're going to the Hall of Fame, Jake. 21-30. I have Jerick McKinnon. I have Theo Riddick, Latavius Murray, Matt Jones, Dwayne Washington, who I really like this week, Cameron Artis Payne, Alanis Forsett, who is Justin Forsett, Rashad Jennings, Devonta Freeman, and Gio Bernard. The two guys that I had the most trouble ranking this week are Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman. Obviously, everyone is going to demand that they be a lot higher in the rankings, but let me throw this out there. I don't think they're playing the Saints this week, which means they're probably not going to finish as the number one and two running backs of the week, right?
I put money on that. I would guess that's very likely. Between the two, I would still put Devonta Freeman higher because he's getting the yards and he's still getting more touches, even though the snap count's similar. He's getting more opportunities in that game. I just look at it. It's more so because there's a few guys in front of him that I don't trust as much, mostly in the Giants-Vikings game. I don't like either of these defenses for the opponents. I'm looking at Rashad Jennings. Both the touchdowns that the Vikings have allowed have been receiving, and I don't think he's going to be catching the ball at all with that hand. And if you look at what's going on with that situation, heck, he might not play, but like this is obviously assuming he's out there. And then Jerick McKinnon, I do like him more than my Asiata, but the Giants' run defense has been one of the best in the league so far. Matt Jones put up a lot of his time in that garbage, just the Giants were letting him run the clock out, and it wasn't happening to the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's the same thing that will happen with McKinnon, because I don't know if he has the power to do that late in the game.
All right, so would you go Freeman or Forsett?
I would go Freeman over Forsett, probably over Dwayne Washington, too, just because I'm with you. I think he could be Amir Abdullah, but we have to see it at first.
No, I liked what I saw from Dwayne Washington last week.
I did, too.
He ran all right against a pretty stingy Packers defense, and I just think that he's going to have the ability to get more involved between the tackles last week. I think a lot of the touch breakdown and the snap breakdown had a lot to do with Detroit being down 50 points within like the first 5 minutes of the game. Of course you're going to have Theo Riddick on the field a lot, and when we saw them get on the goal line, well, there was some Theo Riddick on the field. He didn't rush the ball for a goal line carry. Dwayne Washington did. I think he is very usable this week in any sort of format.
I just don't like the coaches being idiots. And I'm hoping it's coach speak, but I don't like the fact that they're coming out and saying, oh, Theo Riddick's last success in the running game was because of the offensive line. No, it's because Theo Riddick isn't good being a lead running back. We knew that. Keep him in his role and stop dicking around with him.
So you would go Freeman over Jennings, Freeman over – would you go Freeman over – so I forgot. Freeman over Forsett, yes or no?
Yes.
So Freeman over Cameron Ertis Payne?
Yes.
So I like Dwayne Washington more this week just because – I don't like the role that Devonta Freeman is having in the passing game. For a guy that's supposed to be a pass-catching specialist, they're not using him. They're using Tevin Coleman there.
Which is baffling. I really don't get it. You have somebody who caught 70 passes, 100 targets, and rounding off from last year, and then all of a sudden it's like, forget it. We're just going to use Tevin Coleman all the time. Oh, by the way, we went to last season with Tevin Coleman supposedly being the lead option and Devonta Freeman being the change of pass catcher. So I don't get it. I'm with you. This backfield makes no sense to me.
Let's talk about Rashad Jennings for a minute. I don't love him, but I think if he's active, he's probably going to get at least 15 touches in this Vikings game, which is probably deserving of a top 30 ranking. Who do you think now takes on the Shane Vereen role with him being out for the year? A lot of people are saying, oh man, Paul Perkins, he's a rookie. He's going to get involved. I actually happen to think it's going to be Bobby Rainey. He has experience in the role. He was doing it a bit last week too. They even gave him a jump ball in the end zone, which is not a great idea when the guy's like 5'7", but I digress. I think he's going to be used in the passing game over these other guys.
They actually tried him twice, once with that, and they tried him in that little wheel route that Shane Vereen does so well. The biggest thing is I'm with you on this 100%, mostly because Paul Perkins, there's two things. If you're going to be a pass-catching running back, you should probably not have trouble holding on to the ball, and you should probably be a good pass blocker. He has done neither good so far. It's the reason he's been on special teams only. I don't think they're going to start using – I mean, down the road, if you're talking about the second half of the season, maybe he develops and learns. But no, I'm with you. Orleans Darkwell, he can catch – I mean, he's not Alfred Morris bad, but he's basically more of that lead running back if Rashad Jennings is out, and then we'll go to Bobby Rainey. So I think no matter if Jennings is in or Darkwell and Jennings is out, I think Bobby – you're right. Bobby Rainey is going to absorb the pass-catching role.
If there is no Rashad Jennings, where do you think I should put Orleans Darkwa? Like, would you put him ahead? Like, would he be better or worse than Chris Ivory, do you think?
Better than Chris Ivory, only because I'm not sure the snaps are still good. I love Chris Ivory for potential down the road, but not knowing what he's coming back from, I don't know if he's near 100%, if he's 50%, or we have no idea because we never found out what the illness was.
Yeah, based on the snap count last week, I think it was almost identical. I believe T.J. Yeldon played one more snap than Chris Ivory, and I would have to figure that starts to switch a little bit. Maybe that's a game plan the Jags want to go with. I mean, very clearly, they're poorly coached, so getting them to make the right moves is probably not going to happen.
No, that's the biggest issue. You got to think that they start going away from T.J. Yeldon more. I mean, the guy had the backfield to himself for 2 weeks and did absolutely nothing with it. So I really do think, like, Chris Ivory's a nice buy low, in my opinion, but I just don't want to start him yet.
Yeah, so I think if there's no Jennings, I would put Darkwa in at, like, the Gio Bernard. I'd play ahead of him. Tevin Coleman, I'd play ahead of him. And then I'd slot him in between Tevin Coleman and Chris Ivory. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, the 31 to 40 range before we get off running backs. Gio Bernard, Tevin Coleman, Chris Ivory, Kenyon Drake in the Thursday Nighter, Duke Johnson, T.J. Yeldon, Spencer Ware now, Matt Asiata, James White, Chris Thompson, and Dexter McCluster. Don't text and drive. Can't do that. And that's actually followed by Bobby Rainey, Fozzie Whitaker, Travers Cadet, Derrick Henry, that whole range of guys you just really probably don't want to play. I do want to ask you about the Miami backfield. I expect them to be down in this game, probably throwing a lot on the road in Cincinnati, and it did seem, well, Damian Williams is a part of their passing game and probably gets three catches. Out of the main guys that they're going to use, Ajayi, Pede, and Drake does seem like the one who's going to be on the field the most when they're passing.
Absolutely. I'm still going with Drake. I know a lot of people who didn't watch the game are probably going to look at the box score and be like, oh, but Ajayi had some pretty good yards, and he's the one that scored. And if anybody's watching the game, the Browns knew the game was over and basically didn't even try to tackle Ajayi. They're just kind of like, F it, we lost this game. Let's go kill Cody Parkey and get this over with. Really, there was no opportunity for any type of upside before that point for Ajayi. He's lucky there was overtime. So I'm with you. It's Kenyon Drake, really, in that situation. That said, I'm not super excited about any of them because it's a true committee back there.
So, yeah, I mean, it's no reason to hate the Drake. Can't hate the Drake, but it sounds like you don't necessarily need to have to play him this week.
No, you definitely don't. I actually would probably move up Duke Johnson ahead. I actually moved Duke Johnson ahead of Chris Ivory. I know it's not a lot of spots, But if you saw last week with what the Giants did, there are some opportunities to exploit the matchup, similar in that pass-catching role. And you saw last week with Cody Kessler at quarterback, they got Duke Johnson involved a lot more.
Yeah, they did, but they also – I'm actually surprised of how well Isaiah Crowell did in that game. But again, I thought the game flow would be a bit different with the Dolphins being Giant favorites, not scaring the crap out of everyone that took them to the survivor pool.
I'm so pissed off. I faded them. I was so rooting for the Browns last week.
Oh, that would have been huge. If you had faded the Dolphins last week in Survivor, who'd you take?
The Packers.
Packers? Yeah, well, that turned
out. Angry Rodgers at home? You kidding me?
Hey, the Lions got a backdoor cover. That's all I really care about from that game. I'm going to stick with Ivory over him just because in a best-case scenario for Ivory, he does get the goal line touches and he does score touchdowns. And frankly, Duke Johnson doesn't score touchdowns.
That is true. I still like Duke Johnson more just because I'm not sure how many touches Chris Ivory gets.
Let's take a quick break because, guys, you don't need to choose between price and quality to get an amazing and affordable shave. DollarShaveClub.com is the answer to all your problems. And to prove how amazing their shave really is, right now, they're going to give you the first month free to join the club. DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing razors right to my door for a third of the price of what those greedy razor corporations charge. No reason to ever go to the grocery store and deal with that, like, weird barricade ever again. Just go to DollarShaveClub.com and pick up a razor that works for you from their top line of amazing blades. That's all there is to it. I get a first-class shave when I use the Executive Blade. And when I use it with Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, the blade just gently glides along my skin for the smoothest shave ever. With Dollar Shave Club, you can look, smell, and shave like $1 million without paying for it. So here's your chance to see why over 3 million members like myself love Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club is so confident in the quality of all their products, now you can get the first month of the club for free. Just pay shipping. After that, just a few bucks a month. No long-term commitment, no hidden fees. There's no reason not to do it. So get yours today at DollarShaveClub.com/mayo. DollarShaveClub.com/mayo. Now back to the show. All right, let's switch to wide receivers. We have Antonio Brown at the top, A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones coming off a old Monday nighter in, like, the best matchup ever. Odell Beckham, Brandon Cooks coming off a bad Monday nighter, but he's at San Diego this week. He should be fine. Merv Jones, Alshon Jeffrey, Allen Robinson, Larry Fitzgerald, followed by Mike Evans in a brutal matchup against Denver. He's on pace for 203 targets this year, in case anyone wanted to know. Kelvin Benjamin, Travis Benjamin, Amari Cooper, T.Y. Hilton, Jarvis Landry, Doug Baldwin, Demaryius Thomas, Willie Snead in a game-time decision, and Terrell Pryor. Hopefully we know about Willie Snead by the time that you actually have to set your lineups. Unlike this week, it was a crappy situation. But again, people, if you're dealing with a player that is like 50-50-ish, and they play in the Monday Nighter, move that player into your flex spot to give you the maximum amount of options available to switch him in and out. I know Michael Thomas was the logical move, and that really paid off, but in a lot of leagues, Michael Thomas is owned. Maybe you had to pick up Travis Cadet. Maybe you had to go to the other side of the ball and, you know, play Jacob Tammy. Maybe you had to play Mohamed Sanu. Whoever it was, just give yourself as many options as possible to get yourself out of that situation. That's really what the flex spot is going to be for. I had a lot of problems at receiver this week, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't love my top 10. I love the guys that are in there, but I don't necessarily like the matchup. So are there anyone inside that top 20 that you'd rejig around?
Quite a few, actually.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'd knock Brandon Cooks and Alshon Jeffrey outside the top 10, and we just went on why we like Alshon Jeffrey before, but Brandon Cooks gets Jason Verrett. Even if he doesn't get Jason Verrett, he's got Casey Hayward on the other side of the ball, which the San Diego corners have actually been two of the better corners in the league so far to date. Jason Verrett's been locking people down. Hayward's actually... they've actually created a problem with against second receivers. They're not doing very much, as we saw last week. And Phil Dorsett did nothing against them. And I know Phil Dorsett is not on the same page, depending on who's getting covered by who. But at the same time, I just don't have a lot of confidence in Brandon Cooks. I think he's in the teens, but I just don't think he's top 10. And Alshon Jeffery's going to get Darius Slay, who is...
didn't look good last week.
I know. Darius Slay has been a little bit off this year. I still have a little bit of concern just for the fact... look, it's not far, but I would just take Allen Robinson, Larry Fitzgerald, Mike Evans, and probably Kelvin Benjamin before him. So he's still fringe top 10. It's a few spots.
Well, I mean, if we're going to make the case against Cooks, and I somewhat agree with you. I kind of put him there to see if I could bait you into moving him down. Sometimes I do that. It makes for better discussion on the show. Mike Evans, though, I mean, going up against Denver, like I know the targets are going to be there, but he doesn't have a high catch rate to begin with. And I love Mike Evans, but this is a bad spot. Obviously, you're not going to bench him, but when you're thinking about upside, there's not a whole lot there, is there?
I think they're still upside for a touchdown. Heck, you know, look at the receivers that have done some things against this team so far. It hasn't been terrific, but correct me if A.J. Green, right? He's faced them already.
Yeah.
He did pretty good.
He did okay. Kelvin Benjamin did all right as well. He caught a touchdown. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Where would you move Cooks then? So I had Cooks at six. Would you go Cooks or Kelvin Benjamin?
Kelvin Benjamin against Atlanta for sure.
Would you go on the other side of that ball? Would you go Travis Benjamin over Cooks?
No, I'll probably draw the line right there.
So Brandon Cooks drops from six down to 13 in between Kelvin Benjamin and Travis Benjamin. And Alshon Jeffrey, I think I'm going to keep him where he is. I'm going to move Allen Robinson a spot ahead of him, like you mentioned. But I still think that he's going – I think he's going to get enough bulk work that it's not going to matter, that he's going to end up with probably nine targets in this game, and he's going to get his jump ball down the field like he does every game, and he's going to catch it like he does every game, and everything's going to be fine with Alshon. I'm probably thinking, you know, six for 95, and hopefully he scores.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But the one that would actually kind of move up in that list back into that range who's at 15 is T.Y. Hilton, mostly because Vincent Nukumura has been good, but House is stunk. And if he gets House at least half the time in this game, I don't know exactly how Jacksonville uses their corners. I don't know if they match up and shadow people with Prince or if they only play one side of the field Josh Norman. Thank you very much. I don't know what their plan is exactly, but I just think that T.Y. Hilton could easily exploit this matchup. Again, look at what happened last week. He went in the slot, which didn't even matter for what the matchup is because that's how they used him. So I would move Hilton up a little bit.
All right, so where should we put Hilton? Hilton actually on pace for the most targets in the league, I believe. I think it's 223. And without Moncrief around, he's going to continue seeing around double digits of games. So maybe you're right. Got to move him up. T.Y. Hilton or Mike Evans?
Ooh, T.Y. Hilton.
T.Y. Hilton or Larry Fitzgerald?
I'll stay with Fitz on that one.
What's that?
I'll stay with Fitz on there. I'll stay Fitz there.
All right, so that's where he needs to go then. He needs to go in between Mike Evans and Larry Fitzgerald at number 11.
Yeah, that works.
All right, moving him up. You put a little arrow next to his name. Jarvis Landry, Doug Baldwin, Demaryius Thomas, Willie Snead, and Terrell Pryor round out that top 20. With Sanders getting more work than Thomas, do you think it's time to move Thomas down and move up Emmanuel Sanders, or is this still right for this week?
I think this still feels right for this week. The one good thing I would say about Emmanuel Sanders, I don't know that I moved Demaryius Thomas down. I might just move Emmanuel Sanders up because he's going to be getting a decent amount of Vernon Hargreaves, who's just been pretty bad so far. And the matchup is really helping Sanders, but the matchup helps both of them. And this is like, if you look at Simeon in the next few weeks, if you're looking for streaming quarterbacks, you might get three good weeks out of Simeon here if he's really what we've seen so far. I don't expect him to throw four touchdowns every game, but he could be someone that could step in. So I would actually just move Sanders up and keep Demaryius Thomas where he is, mostly because I think Willie Snead is a little bit high, basically to go back to what I was saying before about Casey Hayward. I don't think he's going to have a very good day.
I think he's going to be fine. It just doesn't seem like when Snead's on the field, at least so far this season, regardless of the matchup, he's going to get his double-digit targets. He's going to take some shots downfield, but he's going to have enough of those easy throws over the middle, a lot like from what we saw Kobe Fleener on Monday night. A lot of those are really Snead routes normally, and if he's going to play, I think he's going to just be good enough for those, and they use him in the red zone, which I really like, and I can see them throwing a lot in this game.
I could see it too, but as you mentioned over the middle of the field, I think it really depends on how Willie Snead's used. If he's 100%, I'd feel a lot better about it. I kind of almost feel like if he's out there and he's not, this could be a Michael Thomas, Kobe Fleener game again. Because as you mentioned, like against tight ends, terrible. Over the middle of the field, terrible. Their outside corner is pretty good. So if they're lining Willie Snead up outside, that's the problem. I don't like the fact he's going to be facing Casey Hayward. If they move him inside and maybe move Michael Thomas out and use him more over the middle of the field, I'd feel a lot better. But I think it comes down to whether or not he's 100% or out there to maybe draw some defensive attention.
I think where he was so close to playing on Monday night, he was a game-time decision, obviously. And we're going to have to monitor the reports through the week. I mean, we're not just going to overlook that. Again, you can check the updated rankings. I'm going to work under the assumption that Willie Snead is okay and that he's going to be at least like 80-85% and out on the field, and I would feel comfortable using him. Obviously, if that changes and we hear other reports, then I'll have to amend the rankings a little bit, and I'll do that then. Terrell Pryor, number 20. Am I overreacting to one big week, or is it just the fact that he's still just the guy there? Josh Gordon's not back till next week, so dial up 15 targets again.
You just put him in every position at the same time. Who the hell cares? I mean, he's playing quarterback, he's playing running back, he's playing wide receiver, he's playing defense. So I have no problem with it. The only concern I have is It doesn't sound like they're going to do it because it sounds like Norman's going to go back to staying to the one side of the field situation. I don't think he's going to get the Odell Beckham treatment, but that would be my only concern is if he did. Josh Norman has actually been playing up to his billing, playing up to his pay cost. I know Odell Beckham shook him a couple times, but it wasn't always him last week. So I still think that if you're talking about Pryor versus Norman versus Odell Beckham versus Norman, I would give the edge easily to Norman. I just don't think – I think this is okay because I don't see Norman shadowing the entire game. And again, he can't shadow him if he's at quarterback and running back.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a very key point. With the ways that he can accumulate fantasy points in this game, as we saw last week in Miami, it's justifiable. Like, if he throws a deep touchdown pass, which is not out of the question here, just running some weird trick play, I mean, then you're playing him – you're playing him a wide receiver. You're getting QB value from him. So I think there's enough upside baked into Terrell Pryor that it's not going to be an issue. 21-30, we have Julian Edelman, Jeremy Maclin at 22, Dez Bryant, still not sure what's going on with him, looks like he's going to play, he's number 23, Stephon Diggs, Brandon Marshall, still a bit gimped up, and going up against Seattle, he's 25, Michael Crabtree, DeSean Jackson, I'm back on the Will Fuller train this week, hey, our guy is Steve Smith-Sanor, back inside the top 30, and then Emmanuel Sanders comes in at number 30, last year, against the Raiders, and it's good because Steve Smith actually looked healthy for the first time all season last week. He lit up the Raiders last week, and as we saw week one, I believe you pointed this out, the Brandon Cooks kind of small receivers are big, big problems for the giant Oakland DBs. I think Steve Smith could go nuts here.
I'm with you. This is the week where I just have that feeling, and as you said, there's reasons behind it for the matchup, but this is the week where it's like, Steve Smith is back. This is his monster game. This is the game that wins people some money in the millionaire maker type of lineup situation for Steve Smith. I love him. Actually, I have a few guys in this range I feel a lot better about than you do, apparently.
Like who?
Well, for one, Dez Bryant. Because the San Francisco, and I know this is contingent on whether or not he's having an MRI and what's wrong with him. Like, let's assume, because I think that's what we're doing with the rankings, let's assume he's fine for this week. San Francisco has by far, not even close, has been the worst against opponents' number one receivers. You look at what Doug Baldwin just did to them. I think Dez Bryant's potentially a top. If he's okay, I put him in my side of my top 15, and I can think about it twice.
Oh, wow. This is going to be a point of contention because I'm ranking Dez Bryant as if he's going to be fine against San Francisco. With the way that it's broke down so far in this Dallas offense, like, they're not feeding Dez Bryant. He finally scored a touchdown last week, but like, they're going to run the ball, and they can run the ball. So if they're just going to run the ball, the upside for Dez Bryant just not going to be there. If he doesn't score a touchdown, he's going to be kind of useless. He's going to be like 4 for 45.
I understand it. I'm looking at the first three games of what the 49ers have done, and every single wide receiver one has dominated them. And I know that, you know, Dak Prescott's not an aggressive downfield passer. I just think Dez Bryant's going to go nuts on them. And maybe, you know, I was actually looking at your rankings, because, again, this is PPR, understanding that, I probably would not put him ahead of Jarvis Landry, Doug Baldwin, Demaryius Thomas. He's in that range right there. And I'd say Doug Baldwin, Demaryius Thomas, and Dez Bryant all deserve similar ranking, at least in my opinion.
And for me, I'm just going to keep him lower because he's so contingent on a touchdown. And normally you can dial in Dez Bryant for a touchdown most of the time, but we're just not seeing that so far this season. Maybe Prescott is getting better. Maybe he's evolving. Maybe he's going to be more willing to take shots downfield. But, he's ranked at number 23. You're not sitting Dez Bryant unless you have a really good team, and then it just doesn't matter to begin with. But I don't like the upside for Bryant in this matchup. I can see them getting up by a ton, and then they have no reason to pass. Frankly, in a PPR league, there's a chance Cole Beasley outscores Dez Bryant.
Okay, in PPR, yeah, there's a chance. I wouldn't bet on it. All right, so 0-for-1, let me try, okay? Let's go for the second one here.
Okay, let's do it.
Stephon Diggs. The Giants don't have Rogers Cromartie. Eli Apple is out. Darian Thompson is out. So there's three of their secondaries out, including their nickel corner there. And if you look at Jameson Crowder and Cole Beasley, what they cannot defend is across the middle, these quick twitch guys. And Stephon Diggs, in my opinion, is going to eat up the Giants on Monday night.
All right, well, I think that's a very compelling point, and the fact that the over has hit in all but one Monday night game so far, so you expect a lot of points in that game, even if the team totals are a bit down. And weirdly enough, because they can't do it, Minnesota's not really running the ball. They're passing a lot, so where would you move Diggs up to? Would you go Diggs or Jarvis Landry?
I'd go under Jarvis Landry.
Demaryius.
Well, actually, I would put him behind Demaryius in front of Willie Snead.
All right. I'm good with that. I'll move Diggs to that spot. So that makes Diggs number 19 in the rankings. I think that makes a lot of sense to me. Again, good call on that one, because that wasn't a setup one either. That was just one I needed to be talked off of, because sometimes I get a little bit crazy. Anyone else inside that top 30 we need to shuffle around?
Yeah, we got to go for the rubber match here. But I mentioned them earlier. Emmanuel Sanders against Vernon Hargreaves. The matchup is juicy. I kind of gave the argument earlier, so I got to ask, basically, are you feeling like you want to move him up now?
I am, but I still like the guys around him in that range. Like, I really like the upside of Fuller, and I think that after getting embarrassed last week, now they get a softer matchup against Tennessee, you're going to see Brock Osweiler, the Brock Ness monster, reform back into just chucking it downfield to Fuller. Like, I think Emmanuel Sanders is probably safer if you're playing for 12 points. If you're playing for 25 points, I could see Fuller getting up there. But that's the type of player that he is. It depends on how much risk you want to put in your lineup. If you don't have the greatest receiving core or the greatest team, I think using Fuller in that situation probably makes a lot of sense, because you need a lot of points from someone. If you have a really good team and are looking for stability, I think Emmanuel Sanders makes more sense.
That's fair. So I can't argue with you too much on that one. I like him a little bit more than his ranking, but I agree with you. If you look at the names in that conversation, actually the one, Michael Crabtree, the Ravens have actually stifled number two wide receiver so far, but is maybe Amari Cooper the number two on that team? I mean, seriously, at this point.
I legit don't know what's going on with that. Like, I feel obligated to rank Amari Cooper as high as I do every week. And it's funny because I own no shares of him in any league. Like, he's one guy that I kind of avoided because I saw this situation happening. But you see him play, they take shots with him. They just don't use him in the red zone ever. That becomes Clive Walford and Michael Crabtree and Seth Roberts. But if they're ever taking shots, it's Amari Cooper. He's sort of like, I don't want to say he's sort of like Will Fuller, but he kind of is in a way. They take deep shots with him. He's a big play guy. And he frankly does not have the best hands.
Thank you. I said this is God, but everybody just ignores it. Look, here's what's going to happen. Amari Cooper is going to blow up and have his 150 and two touchdown game like he does once a year, and that's when you sell him at peak value for somebody that thinks he's a wide receiver one, because I'm telling you as of right now, if you want to do the hot takes and T-A-K-E-S or K-E-S or E-K-S or however you want to spell it to have fun with it, Michael Crabtree is the better receiver on this team.
All right, I'm going to keep them where they are for this week, because I think this is a week where Amari Cooper can go off. But that is a situation that I need to monitor going forward. I may have to start swapping those guys in the rankings every week. 31 to 40 before we move off of this, maybe talk about some deeper guys. Mike Wallace, Terrell Williams, Devontae Parker, Eric Decker, Sterling Shepard, Tajae Sharpe, Golden Tate, Philip Dorsett, Little Quincy, Enunwa, Kevin White, and I feel like I should probably move Kevin White up. I'm kind of digging the Kevin White renaissance in terms of targets, but that may have been a one-week aberration. We'll see, but I think he's playable this week in the 40 to 50. Crowder, Beasley, Hearns, Michael Floyd, who's still in concussion protocol as we record this, so we don't know about him. Tavon Austin, Marquise Lee, Hump Daddy, Adam Humphries, never vomits. He's number 47. Jeremy Curley, Tyler Lockett, who's been abysmal so far, and then Mohamed Sanu. He's banged up too, but I'm going to guess he ends up playing in this game. Is there anyone that, like, I don't want to start messing around with the rankings too much in this range because, frankly, it's, you know, you only have so many of these guys you can play, but is there any, like, one or two guys in particular in that range or maybe even below that you think need to be way up?
Way up? I would say Jamison Crowder against Tremont Williams in this matchup is very favorable for him, and he's actually been their best receiver, so at least most consistent so far. He's leading the team in targets, receptions, and yards, so, hey, in a PPR league, Jamison Crowder's a wide receiver three.
All right, so would you go Crowder or Golden Tate?
Crowder at this point.
Crowder, Sterling, or Tajae Sharpe?
Well, actually, Tajae Sharpe is going to be the one that I said I thought you need to move down because Houston's only susceptible to slot receivers so far, and that's not Tajae Sharpe so far.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tajae Sharpe's role is kind of undefined in this offense. They didn't start using him until the final drive. Then he caught everything. So I don't know what's going on with him. It was kind of a weird situation. I used him in a ton of cash teams on DK, too, and that blew up in my face. So you think I need to move Sharpe down, Crowder up? Would you go Sterling Shepard or Jamison Crowder?
In a PPR this week, I'm going with Crowder.
Decker or Crowder?
Decker, that was his anomaly week. That's not going to happen again.
All right, so I'll move Crowder up between Decker and Sterling Shepard. Where would we drop Tajae Sharpe? Would you go Sharpe
or positions?
What's that?
Just switch positions.
All right, so you would play Sharpe over Cole Beasley still?
That's a tough one. I'll leave that one up to you.
I think I like the upside of Sharpe enough, especially if Delanie Walker is either going to be out or hobbled up again, that maybe he can start getting some of these red zone looks and maybe parlay that into a touchdown. Where with Cole Beasley, I mean, ideally for Cole Beasley, if you're inserting him in a PPR lineup, you're looking for 7 for 77, and that's a great output, but that's probably his upside.
Yeah, that's probably so. Actually, I'd still like Sharp better than a new one too, obviously, because assuming that Brandon Marshall's out there again.
I like a noon one this matchup. I just think that I know they signed ASJ. I don't know how involved
that
he's going to be. What's that?
I said that means nothing for the Jets.
It doesn't, but it seems like all the targets that would go to a tight end normally on any other team are going to a noon one.
Right, right. Well, but at the same time, you already had Sharp ahead of him to begin with, so I'm just saying you might as well keep him ahead of him and put him right behind Dorsett.
No, I'm kind of feeling a little Quincy this week. So, yeah, I'm just going to put Sharp in between Kevin White and Cole Beasley, move on my way. Is there any other receiver you want to talk about?
No, and actually the counterpoint to Tajay Sharp was I thought you were pretty aggressive in your Rashard Matthews ranking, so that was going to be my counterpoint. Well, then you would have to drop Tajay Sharp back.
I think there's going to be enough throwing. I think they play from behind in this game. I'm kind of in on the PPR upside of some of these guys as stable guys, but Rashard Matthews started to work his way back into this offense over the last 2 weeks.
He has, but you're also banking on Marcus Mariota finally showing up and playing half decent.
Yeah, he kind of reeks.
I'm just hoping he rushes for 60 yards. That's all I'm banking for. He's turned into Tyrod Taylor this year.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. I don't know what's going on with him. More Jake and rankings coming up in a sec, but first let me tell you about Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, which proudly supports the Pat Mayo Hour. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Do you hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? Well, with Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your financial situation. And even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So, if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/mayo. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. Now back to the show. Let's move to quarterbacks, though, to talk about Marcus Mariota, because he's way down in the ranks. We have Cam Newton at number one. We have Blake Bortles, Phillip Rivers, Matt Stafford, Andrew Luck, Joe Flacco, Carson Palmer, Drew Brees, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins at number 10, Roethlisberger, Simeon, the Brock Ness Monster. Because I like the matchup this week against Tennessee. Brian Hoyer against the Lions. Andy Dalton, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, Tyrod Taylor, Sam Bradford, and then Ryan Tannehill, followed by Blaine Gabbert at 20 and 21. I know I'm going to take a lot of heat for ranking Bortles where I have him, but I know the Colts haven't given up a passing touchdown in 2 weeks. They've still given up over – they're still giving him an average of 300 yards. Jacksonville cannot run the ball. They're going to be very willing to throw. Between Luck and Bortles combined, they're both inside the top five in terms of attempts. I just like this situation for Bortles. And if Chris Ivory's really not going to be healthy and they're going to be chucking the ball every time they get in close, I just like the upside of this matchup. I'm not going to be talked off this one. I'm making a stance with Blake Bortles this week, but I think most people are going to call me an idiot.
I'm not going to talk you that far off it. I mean, it's aggressive, but I don't think big of a problem because guess what? Blake Bortles is his own worst enemy, but in fantasy, he's his own best friend because he puts him down. He throws the interception and forces himself to have to pass to keep up with the scoring. So I actually like the fact that Blake Bortles is a knucklehead and he's super aggressive and can't throw to his receivers half the time in the first half because then he's throwing a ton in the second. So, you know, crazy, maybe a little bit aggressive, but I actually don't have that big of a problem with it.
Do you have a problem with Joe Flacco at 6 against the Raiders, the only team to have given up over 1,000 yards passing so far?
Well, now there are two after last night. So there's now two teams so far. So they're up there, and I don't have a problem with Joe Flacco. The only problem with Joe Flacco is the touchdowns, because he had a really good game against Cleveland, but still only had two touchdowns. I think he could definitely do better. For whatever reason, you'd think that the touchdowns would have been better to date.
Yeah, especially because they have, you know, they don't run the ball at all. But, I mean, I just look at, he did this against Oakland last year, too. He almost put up 400 yards. I just have a feeling that it's hard to predict these touchdowns, but he's going to be put in a position where he's going to have a chance to throw a lot of them, especially if the running game keeps faltering. That I do like the upside, but I think the base of, even if you say he throws one touchdown and throws for 350 yards, that's still a pretty good week from Joe Flacco.
Oh, it definitely is. By the way, I misspoke. It's actually the Chargers are the other team over 1,000. Just wanted to clarify.
Carson Palmer, I have at number 7. People are shook after seeing what he did in Buffalo. We called that a trap game and, like, just stay away in general. I actually moved Carson Palmer out of my cash game lineup as my cash quarterback in DFS because I didn't like how the line movement was going on in this game. Turned out to be great until the rest of my team sucked and I lost anyway, so it didn't really matter. But Carson Palmer at 7, I think he can light up the Rams here, and everyone's kind of going to be down on him. I don't think there's reason to panic just yet.
No, it's at home. The Rams' defense hasn't been what we thought it would be this year, so I'm with you on Carson Palmer. I would have him inside my top 10, so any type of ranking around 7, 8, 9, I have no problem with.
All right, so like Breeze on the road, and it is a revenge game against the Chargers. Don't forget that, people.
Oh, yeah.
Breeze isn't bad on the road. He's just not good, as good as he is at home. He's probably not going to post 370 and 3 touchdowns. You're probably looking at like between 260 and 300, maybe a pair of touchdowns, depends on how that breaks. I still, you know, you're starting Drew Breeze if you have him. Derek Carr's in a good spot. I like the spot that Kirk Cousins is in against the Browns. For a team that does not run the ball in the red zone, he has the most attempts inside the red zone so far this season in terms of throwing the ball. He's just not completing a ton of them. I think that changes this week against the Browns. I think Cousins is a good start.
Yeah, because even if, like last week, you weren't as big a fan for Ryan Tannehill because you were saying for the game flow, which I agree with you, even if that happens for this week, even if the Redskins are up, the problem is, as you just mentioned, they're going to keep passing because they have no running game. Matt Jones has shown that he's still not that good. Got a few yards against the Giants late when they were kind of gassed and things just weren't going right for them. But even so, he still ended up with only having an average day at best. So, as you mentioned, inside the red zone, basically Kirk Cousins isn't all too dissimilar for Blake Bortles when it comes about their offense.
Yeah, they both make terrible decisions, and they put themselves in a situation where they're probably going to have to throw more. And right. People love volume. That's what you want to be looking for in terms of your fantasy quarterback. I have Simeon up at 12. That's ahead of, like, Russell Wilson this week. I don't like a banged-up Russell Wilson on the road playing the Jets. I just don't like it. I mean, he's Russell Wilson. I'm not saying that he can't go off. I just wouldn't expect it to happen.
No, and I don't like the matchup. I don't like the fact that he came out of the game last week. He could potentially come out of the game this week. I'm with you. I think there's better options out there. You might not have one on your team because maybe you drafted Russell Wilson and the other knuckleheads in your team, 8 of them drafted backup running quarterback, so you might have to start him. But just pure rankings, I don't think you're crazy for that one either.
All right, yeah, there's three guys that I think you could feasibly pick up if you're not feeling that. Like I mentioned, I like Simeon the best. Brock Osweiler, I think, has a bit of a rebound week here, although I still don't think he's any good. He could be fantasy good. That's not a problem. And Chef Hoyardee, just playing against the Lions and throwing the ball is going to be a good thing over and over. I don't care how crappy Hoyer is. He has enough weapons to make this work.
Well, Brian Hoyer, if people just forget what happened when he was playing with the Texans and DeAndre Hopkins, had plenty of good games there. Heck, he won some DFS tournaments for some people and won some seasonal league, or at least matchups. So, Brian Hoyer, why people are just saying he can't do it with Alshon, he's basically in the same situation, and he has a little bit better of a running back than at least he had with the Texans.
Sit Eli Manning?
I probably would. That Vikings defense is for real. Like, somebody asked me the reverse question just for defenses. Is the Vikings defense somebody that you can start every single week no matter what? Well, guess what? They already dominated Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton. I don't think it's going to get much worse than that.
Yeah, well, let's move to defense then. I actually have Minnesota in at number 2. They're just behind Denver at Tampa Bay. So Denver, Minnesota, Houston, Cincinnati on Thursday night. Love me a home Thursday defense, especially against Ryan Tannehill. The Dolphins are 4th in turnovers so far. They have 7-4 of those picks. Arizona at home against the Rams, streaming against the Rams. Even the Bucs were a good defense last week, although the Rams scored 38 points. So Arizona's going to be fine. New England, Seattle, Baltimore, Carolina, Washington, the Jets, the Rams, the Cowboys, you know, the Lions, Buffalo, San Fran, Jacksonville, Indy. Just those teams love turnovers and sacks. So even if they're a crappy defense, it's not going to matter. Is there any like specialty D, maybe a streaming D that you want to highlight?
Now, the Bengals were my favorite streaming defense of the week because there's not a lot of leagues where people were just carrying them through the first couple games because of some of the matchups. So they're my favorite ones. If they're not out there, I actually think the Ravens are a really sneaky streaming play. If, like, a lot of these top-end defenses might – like, the Patriots, probably one of my favorites overall, period, especially if you're looking at one of those, I want to stream a defense and be able to do it for multiple weeks because the next two games – are really nice too for the Patriots. But if you don't have the Patriots sitting out there, if you don't have the Bengals, the Ravens are really tempting.
Yeah, and if you really want to go deep, I think a lot of people are not going to use the Rams against Arizona. But as we saw with Carson Palmer, you know, he's not afraid to throw a pick or two. So they can generate enough pressure on Palmer where even if they give up 30 points, I think they can generate enough sacks, maybe turnovers, and potentially score that they could have a useful week in terms of fantasy. Does that make sense?
Definitely. I agree with you.
All right, let's move to tight end rankings to finish this off. We have Greg Olsen at the top going up against them Falcons, who don't stop tight ends ever. Jordan Reed, if Gronk's going to play, I have him at number three. Kyle Rudolph, Pitt, Travis Kelce, Delanie Walker, assuming he's playing. Jacob Tammy, Hunter Henry, or Hunter Henry, or Hunter Hurst Henry, Triple H, as I may have to put that in here in a second. Julius Thomas, Eric Ebron, Zach Miller, he looked pretty good with Hoyer getting a lot of targets. Jimmy Graham, and we'll get to him in a sec. Cameron Brate, Virgil Green, Jason Witten, Dwayne Allen, Jesse James, Clive Walford. And then at number 20, and this is something that's funny because I took heat about it last night when I first released the rankings, I have Kobe Fleener at number 20. Like, last week was Kobe Fleener week. I don't think that Kobe Fleener is good. If Willie Snead's going to be back, I think that eats into his targets. Like, I don't want to play this guy. Sell high if you can.
I would absolutely sell high. I've been saying that all week heading into the game. As soon as it happened, you should have trade offers ready to go. At the same time, no, I can't get on board with you here. Not 9 out of 20, because mostly the San Diego Chargers have been terrible against tight ends and terrible at the middle of the field. If we go back to the wide receiver discussion we had, obviously, if I'm going to stay consistent, and I think you should knock down Cooks and Steed a little bit, you're on the opposite side, so I definitely understand. If I'm knocking them down, and I think Michael Thomas and Kobe Fleener are going to have the better day, then I think you can still get one more week at a value out of him. But no, I don't think his value is ever going to be higher than it was right now, because right now it's pretty much back to preseason hype level.
All right, so Kobe Fleener or Dwayne Allen?
Oh, Kobe Fleener. Dwayne Allen went from, hey, yay, we don't have to worry about Kobe Fleener anymore. Oh, wait, there's a guy named Jack Doyle who's stepping up and giving us the same headache.
All right, Kobe Fleener or Jason Witten?
Jason Witten. I think you have Jason Witten way too low.
Nah, he has 8 targets the last 2 games?
Yeah, but he can get back on track. If you get San Francisco's defense, he can definitely get back on track.
I'm just concerned that Dallas just continues to run the ball over and over and over and over and over again.
That's a valid concern.
So, I would rather play Jason Witten anyway. I'll move Fleener up from 20 to 16, put him behind Jason Witten and ahead of Dwayne Allen. Like, I would still rather play Cameron Brate against Denver. I just think those are easy passes for Jameis to complete. He threw the ball 58 times against the Rams. He might do that again this Sunday. Actually, he might not, because they may actually slow him down a little bit. But I think that Brate presents probably the easiest completion on the field for him.
I absolutely agree with you. And Cameron Brate, I would have as my pick. If he's still out there, I'd pick him up and drop Dwayne Allen. And I would drop a couple of these guys out there. Like Zach, I would prefer Brate long term to Zach Miller, because Zach Miller's only chemistry so far has been with Brian Hoyer, not with Jay Cutler. So I'm actually worried that Jay Cutler comes back and hurts his value. So I like Brate's value a lot. I think you're not worried about Jacob Tammy after not showing up against the Saints?
No, not really. I mean, he got his red zone target in that game. And the Falcons were very content with just running the ball over and over. I don't think that's going to really be an option for them against the Panthers.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I think that Tammy's consistency and going back up to 7-8 targets a game, that's going to be there for him. I wanted to ask you about Triple H, Hunter Henry. If there's no Antonio Gates, I mean, he played every offensive snap, and now he gets New Orleans? Yeah, sign me up for that.
I'm completely on board with that, just for as long as he's starting and as long as Antonio Gates is in the lineup, because we talk about it all the time that rookie tight ends don't do a lot in their rookie season. They need time to develop them. Actually, to reference, I wrote throwing this after the last tight end to finish in the top two, actually as a tight end one as a rookie, was Heath Miller way, way, way back in the day. So you just need the opportunity, and you need somebody who can be a red zone option, because Heath Miller was buried by touchdowns that year. And this is what you almost got me. I almost said Hunter Hurst Henry. This is what Triple H will do for you, is basically you look at this matchup, and I think that Henry's got a really nice situation going forward as long as Gates is out.
Well, I mean, of course, we know that he has the pedigree to go along with it, so he's going to be absolutely fine as long as Gates is out. I know New Orleans has actually been kind of stingy to tight ends, but again, no one kind of has the class and upside and talent, and the Chargers just have a general lack of options on offense anyway, that he can incorporate himself as a decent cog in an offense that likes throwing to its tight end anyway as a potential upside play this week. Last guy we need to talk about, Jimmy Graham. Jimmy, he comes back last week and looks like Jimmy Graham all over again. Now, I have concerns about Russell Wilson, so I have concerns about basically everyone that's not named Doug Baldwin this week at the Jets. But what do we do with Jimmy Graham moving forward?
I think you got to start considering him as a fringe tight end one. The biggest thing coming out of the game is not just the usage. It was the fact that he was taking some serious hits and coming out fine. Like, he was the Jimmy Graham we remember from 2 years ago, as in the one that didn't stink when he first got with the Seahawks and then the offense exploded when he got hurt. He actually looks like he could be an integral part of this offense. As you mentioned, back with the wide receivers, Tyler Lockett's just not on the field. Jermaine Kearse is decent, but if you're looking at potential, you're just saying pure talent. It's Doug Baldwin and then Jimmy Graham in this offense when it comes to the passing game. So as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be the new poster boy for coming back from this injury. And this is what you can hope to achieve. No longer are we hoping to get Cadillac Williams out of somebody.
All right, well, you got to pick him up because of the upside that you just talked about. I think that's a nice move. But we got to get out of here. Jake, thank you for being on the line today.
No, sorry. I thought I had the better great war. Absolutely. Anytime.
All right, that'll do it on the Pat Mayo Hour. You can follow Jake on Twitter at AllInKid and check out all of his rankings up on rotoexperts.com. You can even find a link to his standard and half point PPR rankings in my column, because I don't do standard rankings. Sometimes people want to check it out and get Jake's probably more accurate rankings too. So that's something you want to do. He doesn't have his fun links though, although he did provide me with a good one last week. Either way, you can follow me at BPME on Twitter, and remember to subscribe to the Pat Mayo Hour on YouTube and iTunes and, you know, wherever you subscribe to things that you like listen to on your phone. Pat Mayo Hour is going to be there. All right, Pat Mayo, I'll see you next time.